Welcome back to the History of Rock. His name is Shim. He's the rock star.
His name is Brandon. He's the DJ. Class is officially in session.
20 years ago, January 31st, 2003, Johnny Cash released his version of Nine Inch Nails' Hurt. I remember I was in college in radio broadcasting school when this song dropped, and there was a kid that we went to school with who was a diehard Nine Inch Nails fan, like super diehard. And we asked him about it, and his answer was, it's the most covered Nine Inch Nails song, so who really cares? Like, he just kind of blew it off because it was already getting a lot of traction. A lot of people were like, this is amazing. Like, this Johnny Cash version is amazing. And this dude was just like, yeah, whatever.
Dude, I remember hearing a bunch of people that they came in and they were the hardcore, because 90s Nails fans are insane. They are insane. They're the dedication and the whole, like, yo, screw everything that's not Nine Inch Nails. It's like 90s Nails and Tool. Those are the two. Tool and 90s Nails, those fans are, you can't fuck with them. So I was like, I remember they would hear the Johnny Cash version and they'd want to not like it. They'd be like, oh, well, another cover? You're trying to be, and then they'd hear it and go, damn.
Yeah, it's really good. And we're going to get to one of the reasons why it was so good at the end of this episode. So Johnny Cash, born J.R. Cash on February 16th, 1932. A lot of people thought that the Cash part was kind of the made-up stage name. No, that was his legit last name when he was born.
And the thing I remember from that is when they made the biopic, his parents, when he was a kid, used to call him J.R. And it just, but I never really put it together. I just always thought, so his dad, but originally his dad wanted his name to be Ray. His mom wanted it to be River. And they couldn't decide, so they settled on JR, which I think is hilarious. I'm like, yeah, no one wear the pants. Just coast on through on the boy's name.
So he changed his name to John R. Cash when he applied for the Air Force in the early 1950s. Now, I know what people are thinking. I thought his name was Sue because of the song A Boy Named Sue. Well, that's not an original Johnny Cash song. You've heard that song, right?
I've heard it a couple of times. I'm not deeply familiar with it, but I get the concept. So I don't know what in the 1950s or 40s, what family names their boy Sue, and unless they're really trying to fuck up his life.
Well, it was written by somebody else, not by Johnny Cash. Do you know who wrote the song?
No, I thought about it, and I remember thinking, and I'm sure I'm wrong, but the only answer I can come up with, because I know that this person wrote a few other songs for people, or they took these songs and then you went, oh, I couldn't believe Chuck Berry wrote that song. And so I want to say maybe it was a Chuck Berry tune, that because they toured at the same kind of festivals back in the day. Like, was it Chuck Berry?
It was not.
Okay.
It was, do you know the name Shel Silverstein?
Shel Silverstein? No, I do not.
He wrote The Giving Tree, Where the Sidewalk Ends, A Light in the Attic. He was a very famous poet. And I specifically remember his look. Bald head, big beard, brilliant, brilliant writer. He actually wrote A Boy Named Sue. And the whole thing, for anybody who's not familiar about the song, is that it's about a boy whose dad leaves him, and the only thing that son of a bitch left him was the name of Sue. And so growing up, he was beat up for it. He was ridiculed for his name. And it just, it made him create this hard outer shell because he was named Sue. So future on down the road, he's now grown up. He's a tough son of a bitch. His whole point is, I'm going to find my dad and I'm going to kill that son of a bitch that named me Sue. So he finds his dad in a bar. They start duking it out. Like, full-on brawl in the bar, ends up outside, and the dad tells him, he goes, I knew I wasn't going to be there for you later on in life, so I had to give you or leave you with something that I knew was going to help you get through this tough life. So I gave you the name Sue to make you the tough son of a bitch that you are now. And I know I just said son of a bitch like a billion times, but...
But, like, and that's that, all of that is in one song?
Yeah, dude. It's a great song.
Dude, I'm telling you,
I'm telling you, and you need to, like, if you're not familiar with Shel Silverstein, look up Where the Sidewalk Ends when I was a kid. We used to read that one all the time. They're brilliant. From his artwork to the actual written words, absolutely brilliant.
That's a really dope concept for a song. I love as a songwriter, songs that have that level of layer where you can discuss it and go, and there's layers. And they don't have that as much in songs these days. I love that stuff.
I get go research it more, look into the lyrics, listen to the song, and then also look up Shel Silverstein. So Johnny Cash also did not write the hit song Ring of Fire. And it burns the ring of fire.
No one can get
the
that
ring
one,
of fire. Do you know that I had like a dozen people convinced that that song was about herpes?
Yeah, most people think that's an easy one. That's like me convincing you that drop bears exist. If you don't know, you don't know. Okay,
it's the ring of fire because it burns from love.
Yeah, burns. Yeah, no, it's about the gates of hell or something, right? Anyway, but I know that he. So the catch is he didn't write this song either. He didn't write some of his biggest hits, and the name of the person that wrote it, I don't know what, but it's the woman who became his wife, right? Whose name I forget.
So she was a co-writer. So June Carter and Merle Kilgore were the ones that actually wrote it. Now, June's sister Anita Carter had recorded the song for her 1963 album, Folk Songs Old and New. It didn't do a whole lot. Like, it was released, but the song just didn't really do that well. Right. Cash claimed that he had a dream where he heard the song accompanied with those Mexican horns, and then that was the version that he released.
Oh, that's dope.
Such a good song. I love that song.
The thing that I loved about it when I saw the Johnny Cash doco, the biopic, the fact that the original idea came from his wife, I love the fact that, A, they showed it, that that's the real story, and that it really goes to show. I love the fact that there is that element of his relationship with June Carter where behind every great man, there's a greater woman, and she even wrote his biggest, I think that's like one of his two biggest hit songs ever. And I love the fact that it's like, you know, and he didn't, a lot of men back in those days would have been like, no, stay there, little woman. I wrote this song. I'll pay you on the back end. No, he gave her full credit. She came on tour. It was the whole thing. They were a duo. They were a dynamic duo, and it was fucking awesome.
So Cash was arrested 7 times for a variety of reasons. How much time did he spend in jail/prison?
I'm going to say no more than one night. I just have a weird feeling that he's the kind of guy that, like, yeah, am I right?
Yeah, one night.
Yeah. I have a feeling at that time with his notoriety, and he never did B&Es. He never did, like, got busted for drunk driving. It was like, drug possession and, like, public or, like, you know, being on stage and saying things you're not supposed to say. They lock you up. You get out on bail. You leave the state. Happens again later. Like, same thing every time. Basically, am I right?
Yep. So for his offenses, it was just one night. But of course, this also does not include his performances, where you could extend how long he was in a prison because he was performing Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison or Johnny Cash at San Quentin. But for his actual offenses, it was just one night.
Yeah.
Now, Cash, where did he purchase his first guitar?
I'm going to say a pawn shop. a pawn shop.
Oh,
sorry,
pawn,
not a
pawn shop. Oh my god,
that always happens. Not a pawn shop. We got to be careful not to get demonetized for saying
happens.
That.
Yeah.
Pawn shop.
Now, well, I mean, if you look at it, I guess maybe
secondhand
this,
shop.
It was so. What I have here is the country that he bought it in, and I guess this could be like the pawn shop of Europe, Germany. He didn't buy a guitar until he joined the Air Force, and he was shipped off to Germany, and that's where he purchased his first guitar.
Okay, so he didn't buy it. That's what you meant, not the store, the actual country. Okay,
yeah,
it's
the
more
actual
of a
country.
Geographical question. Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right. Who was in the Million Dollar Quartet?
Okay, I've heard about this, and I remember it was like.
So
the rap
obviously
pack,
Johnny
the rock
Cash
and roll.
Is in one. So
right. So I want to say Jerry Lee Lewis. I want to say something like, I want to say Elvis. I want to say Jerry Lee Lewis. And then there's I want to say that. I'm not sure if it is, but the other guy, I'm like, I want to say like Chuck Berry, but then probably not Chuck Berry. It's probably a white guy because that's how it was back then. Like, seriously. And I don't know enough old rockers. Is there a fourth guy?
There is. And well, it's a quartet. So there's four people.
Yeah. Well, sorry.
Carl Perkins. Carl Perkins is his name. So on December 4th, 1956, Cash was already in the studio while Carl Perkins and Jerry Lee Lewis were recording some new tracks. Elvis showed up, and then the four of them ended up having a jam session. These songs, about half of which were actually gospel songs, were released under the title Million Dollar Quartet.
That's so cool.
Could you imagine being in the studio with those four?
Yeah, you'd lose it. You'd lose your mind. And the funny thing is, Carl Perkins is kind of like that other guy from the Rat Pack. You got Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., and who?
Who's that other guy?
Exactly. No one remembers. So that's why. So forgive me for not knowing who Carl Perkins is. Quotation marks like he was ever a real guy.
Okay. All right. So final thing here on Johnny Cash. We were talking about sort of the interpretation of songs earlier. What was Cash's interpretation of Nine Inch Nails' Hurt? And I'll give you a
this
hint.
This I love. No. Okay, go ahead. Give me a hint, but I've got a story. Go.
So the hint that I have is that a lot of people interpret the song. It's as a young individual on the obvious downward spiral to self-destruction.
So I remember seeing an interview with Rick Rubin where they were discussing how this song got made. And this is what I was looking forward to telling you about. Have you seen the interview that he did about this, Rick Rubin, who produced the song?
I haven't seen it. I've read it.
So the way that they did it was Rick Rubin and him were working on a covers record, and he was down in Nashville, Rick Rubin's up in LA, and they would just pass back links. They would link, like, Johnny would send him, you know, this song, that song, what about this song, what about that song? And then Rick Rubin would send him links doing the same thing, and they would just bounce ideas around. I think Rick Rubin, sent it to him, either whoever sent it to the other person. The idea was, I hear this song and I get what they're trying to do, but because of where I am in life and the fact that I think privately they kind of knew it was going to be his last big record. And he was like, I don't hear that story. I hear a man at the end of his life and reflecting on all the pain that he caused people and all the mistakes that he made. And it was coming from a totally different, as I mention it, I get chills because I'm like, it's different because if you were Trent Reznor writing the song, saying I'm making a concept record and the character is an old man going through this journey. But what happened was a man who had actually gone through that journey in real life heard the song and said, I hear something totally different because I'm in the middle of a deep experience, basically getting ready to pass on to the next place. And this song is my jam. This song is the song that captures it. And it's totally a different message. And then, and I personally think that that's why people love the song so much, because he didn't actually change the song. He just sang it with a voice that was so authentically true that you have no choice but to go on that brand new journey with him. And it's the same fucking song.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It was brilliantly done. So what I have written here was essentially everything you just said. So Cash interpreted the lyrics as a man at the end of his life, much like he was. He was suffering from autonomic neuropathy brought on by diabetes. Producer Rick Rubin said it was a major struggle for Cash to record the song. There were times where his voice sounded broken, but Cash tried to turn that into a positive thing for the song, which is, I think, what you're talking about, where you can hear it in his voice. Like, this is, it's the same song with almost a completely different meaning behind it.
And for me, it always goes back to, I always think of the scene, and it's, I get chills again while I'm talking about it. The scene in his movie, the movie that they made with Joaquin Phoenix about his life, where his transition to becoming a real songwriter is the producer says to him, we've all heard that song before. He's basically, he's auditioning, the producer's about to kick him out of the studio and say, sorry, you don't have what it takes, because he's playing a cover. And the producer says, we've all heard that song, we've heard it that way a million times. And he finally says, what I want to hear is, if you got hit by a truck outside and you got 3 minutes left and you got one song left to sing to talk about what your life meant. And as I say it, chills are all over my body because I'm like, that is exactly what that song was. Finally, he's on the curb, he's on death's door, and he chooses that song, and then he sings it, and then he means it, and then he puts it out, and that's why it's lasted, 20 fucking years, and we're still talking about it. Because real music lives on past the person that sings it. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect example of it. And the fact that it came from a cover means that music is greater than any one person.
Yeah, and that is, so obviously the song was released 20 years ago in 2003, January 31st. I think that was what it was. Got that written down, right? Yeah, so January 31st, 2003. Cash would end up dying just months later that year. He would pass away on September 12th, 2003. So, I mean, truly was right at the end there. Now, my question for you, if I go to Spotify, what is his most listened to song on his Spotify page?
I want to say it's that song, right?
It's Hurt.
It's got to be Hurt. It's got to be.
How many listens did it get?
I'd guess it's over 500 million.
516 million on that one song.
I'm
and then his number two, and then his number two song is Ring of Fire, which has almost 300 million listens over on Spotify.
Yeah. So that doesn't surprise me, because, you know, on my, not that I'm comparing in any way, but I find it fascinating that on my Spotify, the last track on my record called Don't Wake Me Up, which is a very dark, solemn song, has way more views than I would anticipate. So people really do resonate with those songs that are about that deep emotional thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it speaks volumes about what he did. Yeah.
So that's going to do it for Johnny Cash, at least for this episode. And it's an interesting topic, and I know it's one that we talked about before on the morning show that I was on, is what cover songs are better than the original? Not just a good cover song, but better than the original. And this is one of those where it's really difficult for me to say that Johnny Cash's version is better, because the Nine Inch Nails original is so good. It's just, it's so good. And I honestly, although I can't hear Nine Inch Nails version without thinking of Rick and Morty anymore, because there's one of the seasons ends with that playing in the background, and it's like, and it's just like this really somber moment.
It's really hilarious.
And, and so I would probably put them at even stature when it comes to Nine Inch Nails and Johnny Cash's version.
When I get asked that question, and whether it's this song or any other song, I always go back to just listen to them, and whichever one gives you the chills or whichever one takes you out of space and time, whichever one hits you harder, that's the better version. And that doesn't mean it's the same for any one individual person. Yeah. Most people would probably say Johnny Cash's version is better, but that might just be because it was released more recently. It might be because they're not into the whole, the way that industrial music is mixed. Whatever it is, whichever one hits you harder, that's the better version. And either way, they should both be fucking really proud, because that's an epic, epic song.
All right, before we wrap up, there is one song that I can think of where I know, at least for myself, definitively, this song is better than the original. The cover is better than the original. Jimi Hendrix, All Along the Watchtower.
Yes, 100%.
Because that song is fucking epic. Like, that song is amazing. So, and obviously, you know, the lyrics were great, written by Bob Dylan. So that's not not too shabby right there, but that's going to do it for this episode here of The History of Rock. Lots more videos coming up here. We are going to take a week off of the History of Rock, because I was creating some other video content, and with my buddy Alan, we're going to do Die Hard with a Vengeance. That's the third movie in that franchise, and I found just way too much stuff. So that's what's going to be coming out in place of the History of Rock next week, but then we're going to be back at it. I almost forgot exactly what we have coming out here. We are going to have... I don't know. This is where I need help in the comments. So if you guys are here, obviously, click the like button down below, subscribe, click the bell so you get the notifications, and then comment down below, because I'm trying to wrap around what we do based on if it happened like a decade ago, 2 decades ago, like 10, 20, 30 years, etc. And coming up for the middle of February, David Bowie. That's something we'll be able to cover, which will be a really good topic. And then a week after that, it was 20 years ago. Think about this. Rob Trujillo joined Metallica.
Oh, God.
Think about that, dude. Like, he's been in the band as the longest bassist.
I
mean, Newstead wasn't in Metallica for 20 years.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun episode.
So those ones are coming up. But I have one earmarked. And let me know if this is something that you guys would want or not, because it can be a kind of a dark topic where... I tracked down, it was 2003 in February. It's the anniversary of the Station nightclub fire at the Great White Show. And I was wondering if we should do an episode on sort of live event tragedies and kind of what unfolded and how maybe new safety measures have come about, how bands have reacted to them, how things may have changed. Because I don't want it to be this like super dark thing where it's all about the tragedy. I would rather look at what did that create, or how did that change certain things. So let me know in the comments.
Sure. Yeah. Let us know if you want to check that out, because I can see how that could go either way. Some people would be like, nah, just talk about the Rush record that was the anniversary of whatever day it was, as opposed to Dimebag.
Yeah, you know,
going into detail
and all that, because, you know, when we were talking about Big Day Out, obviously we focused on the deaths, you know, pretty heavily as well. And I that's what I don't want this to become. I don't want to be like, hey, here's all this horror. I just want to, you know, that's something that did pop up. So, yeah, so let me know. Yeah, I drop two of those a day. So make sure, again, you guys are clicking the like button, subscribe, click the bell down there as well. And on that note, his name is Shimmy's the Rock Star.
His name is Brandon. He's the DJ. Class is dismissed. See you next week.